I just get really excited about things like, you know, putting a curated list of resources together is not necessarily a novel idea. People are doing that. But, you know, I think there's value in putting your perspective on that curated list out into the world. And you're really adding value to people's lives. And I think that's a really great thing. Like, we have the power to do that as designers and technologists. Then we should try.
You're listening to the Yo Podcast with Rob Hope.
Jess Eddy is a US-born product designer currently working in Sydney, Australia. Jess is also a true maker at heart with an impressive portfolio of diverse side projects. We rap about the ice cream industry, UX design, podcasts, and the need for curation online. Yo, Jess, welcome to the show.
Hey, Rob. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Cool. So before we dive deep into your background and side projects, tell us exactly what you currently up to at Cluey Learning there in Sydney.
Yeah, so Cluey Learning is an educational technology startup company, and we are building sort of next generation learning platform for tutors and students grade 3 through 12. So we have what's really great about our platform and our company is we have an in-house education team that comes up with the custom learning plans for students for chemistry, English, and maths. And I'm the product designer on the platform. It's really cool. We're building, it's just a really neat collaborative environment. It's a way for tutoring to take place online in a really sort of nice and easy way.
That's incredible. It must be quite a rewarding job.
Yeah, actually it is. And I think as a designer, that's something that I have thought about more, I guess, later in my life and later in my career. And that's something that's important to me is doing work that I consider to be meaningful. And I think helping students learn is something that I can be really, really proud of. And I think something our company is really proud of.
Epic. So are you enjoying Australia, more so Sydney?
Yeah. So it's one of the most beautiful places I've ever lived. I think there's a lot of great things about the United States where I'm from, in New York City and other cities like San Francisco. Cities in the United States are becoming increasingly difficult to live in for a variety of reasons. And Sydney is a city that I consider to be very comfortable and very easy. It's beautiful. Like, we have the beach, we have the city, and you can get from one to the other in roughly 20 minutes in a car. So it's really pretty, and the weather is great most of the time.
Awesome. So in 2010, I actually went on a road trip with my dad and my bro. We went from Sydney all the way down to Melbourne, did the whole of New South Wales, just surfing any point break we could find. And it's very similar to the garden route in South Africa.
Oh, great. Cool. Yeah, the surfing here is amazing.
So you worked your way up through various jobs to a job at JE Design in 2011 in New York.
Yeah.
In here, you spent 5 years as a UX consultant. Assuming you dealt with a ton of different clients, what did you say the most common mistake businesses are making with their approach to UX?
Yeah, that's a really great question. I think it's an even broader question than that, which is, what's the mistake that most people are making with product that is related to user experience and design? You know, I think a lot of the companies that I worked with were trying to build something, trying to be successful, but wasn't quite sure if the product was well-suited for users, if it really hit the mark. So there's a lot of, you know, assumptions that are getting baked in, a lot of validation that needs to take place once you get your product or your feature into the market. So as a UX designer or as a design consultant, I spent a lot of time trying to get clients to do certain activities and things that would get their app to the market with less risk, meaning how can we do it a bit quicker? How can we do it a bit cheaper? How can we make this less risky for everyone involved, mainly the company?
I mean, you would say you're still a UX consultant?
I guess that part of me will never goes away, especially when I'm having conversations.
I was about to say.
Conversations with people, and, you know, so many people have questions about, you know, technology and startups and building stuff, you know, and that's been something that's been going on for a long time. So I don't ever consider myself, you know, I'm always a teacher, I'm always a facilitator, always a consultant of some sort. I mean, even at my full-time job, you know, that those things are just part of the work we do. And especially, like, I'm the only designer on the product team. So really educating the team on why we're making certain design decisions, who they're serving, and really doing that all the time. So everyone is sharing the same information and the same knowledge. So we can actually really move forward together as a team.
Awesome. So I want to break into a quick intermission I like to call no context.
Okay.
You simply choose either of the two words I say, no explanation needed at all.
I'm ready.
Email or Slack?
Slack.
Australia or USA?
Ooh, USA?
Sydney or Maine?
Maine as in the state in the USA?
Yes.
You've really done your research. Sydney.
Fiction or nonfiction?
Nonfiction.
Bulma CSS or Bootstrap framework?
Ooh, this is going to be very controversial.
I'm ready.
I'm going to go with Bootstrap.
Wine or coffee?
Oh, so both is not an answer.
No.
coffee. Okay.
Instagram or Twitter?
Ooh, these are two competing passions. Twitter.
Breyers or Haagen-Dazs?
Haagen-Dazs, yeah.
Last one, Ben or Jerry?
We got to go with Ben. He's the businessman.
Okay, rad. So for the listeners that don't know, Jess co-founded a startup called Finn and Phoebs that was stocked in over 1,800 stores across 40 states. From someone with a graphic design turned UX specialist, what drove you to co-found a food startup? You know, were you itching to try build something new and tangible? Or was it a drive knowing you can literally make a kick-ass ice cream?
Yeah, so it was something I never expected to do in my lifetime. I think some things fell into place and it sort of happened by chance. And I have a tendency to take things too far. And I think this is probably a great example of that. But at the time, you know, my partner and I just started making ice cream. And it was winter in New York. It was February. It was really cold. You don't leave the house that much because it's just very painful. And we were looking for a sort of winter hobby. We're both into cooking, into food, really into like tasting things, ingredients. So I had made ice cream before and had an ice cream maker, and we just decided to give it a go. And before we made the first flavor that we ended up making, which is called Fluffernutter or Fluffnut, we talked about our sort of childhood treats and things that we really like to eat as kids. And for me, one of those things was marshmallow fluff with peanut butter in between two Ritz crackers. I don't know if you've ever had that, but it's amazing.
No.
And then so we started with this idea of something that was really delicious, and we decided to sort of try to make an ice cream flavor out of it. So we did that. We made those Ritz crackers things with marshmallow and peanut butter, and then we covered it in chocolate. And then we just made a simple vanilla base, and we put the chunks in and we had our first flavor, Fluffnut. So when we made that flavor, it turned out really good. And I think we got really excited about that and really kind of hooked on the process of conceptualizing a flavor, getting the ingredients, making the recipe, sort of testing it and getting to an outcome that was really good and a flavor that was really flavorful and kind of different. So we got really hooked on that. So we just kept doing that. And then at some point, winter was over or had ended or was coming to an end. And we were still making ice cream. So we decided to test it with a larger audience. And at this time, I was very big on validating stuff before taking too many steps forward. And so we took our ice cream to farmers markets in New York. And or actually, the first one we went to was in Brooklyn. And it went really well. And we sold out. People loved the ice cream. We did a survey, which was at that time, we didn't realize what we were doing was market research. But we were basically trying to have an understanding of, you know, sure, everyone likes ice cream. But, you know, why do you like this ice cream? And how does it compare to ice cream that you eat and that you can find in the store? So we started collecting a little data about how consumers felt about the ice cream. And it was all really positive. And I think we just got really hooked on that and on making a product that we felt was a bit different. At the time, it was very hard to find ice cream that was made with high quality ingredients that you could feel good about eating. And it was just a bit different in terms of flavors and what you could find.
Wow. So just thinking of the way you just described that process, you know, versus digital, you have, you know, that experience when you watch someone eating your own product and just that joy they give you, it must be quite like a drug.
Yeah, it really is. And I think that's one of the things that really drew us into it and kept us going. And, you know, there's nothing like, you know, giving someone a sample of ice cream and just seeing their face light up and just you know, hearing them say things like, wow, this is amazing. This is the best ice cream I've ever had. This is really great. So there was definitely like a lot of dopamine kicks happening at that time when we were, you know, with customers and seeing them eat ice cream.
Hey, this is Jason Schuler. Best you hit that subscribe button as I'm coming up in the next Yo podcast.
So we got a question here from Andy in the UK, just asking, what is your favorite Finn and Phoebe's flavor?
Ooh, okay. So I tend to like much more minimal and simple flavor combinations. So I think for me, we had a vanilla cinnamon flavor that was just vanilla ice cream and cinnamon, but it was extra fancy Vietnamese cinnamon, which is this really lovely sweet cinnamon. And it almost made the ice cream taste like it was sweeter, like it had more sugar in it or something. It just had this beautiful and even kind of like floral flavor about it. And there was nothing else in the ice cream, no chunks, no cookies, no anything. Most people tend to like the chunks and the cookies. Like everyone has grown up on Ben and Jerry's, and I think to a certain extent has become a little programmed with that style of ice cream. For me, I like that too, but I really like, you know, for me, it was like, how can we do a flavor with the least amount of ingredients on it that is just mind blowing?
So can you share one takeaway for any digital makers out there wanting to dabble in the tangible retail space?
I think starting small is a really key thing. And this applies to technology products as well. Like build something small, get it out and get some feedback. But I think with retail and CPG, it's so competitive, like especially in the United States, where you can go into any grocery store and, you know, if you want to buy ketchup, there's like 15 different types of ketchup. So if you're creating a retail product, a food product, there has to be something so good or unique or different about it that's going to make it stand out. And even when you have that attribute, sometimes it is still not enough because there's a lot of other factors at play that determine your success. But, you know, I think really thinking about like, why do I want to make this product? Why should it exist? What's so good about it? Why is it different? You know, how will it stand out compared to everything else that's on the shelf?
Well, it's pretty difficult question when you have this little idea and you just have to actually be honest with yourself.
Yeah, it's, I mean, the positive way to look at it is it can eliminate a lot of things, you know, like we all get excited and like maybe you have home recipes or something that, you know, get passed down in your family and they're really great. And it's, I'm not saying that can't be successful, but you know, you've really got to look at the market landscape and kind of think about what are your chances of success are in that area.
Let's deep dive into the digital side projects. So there's no question you are a maker at heart, okay? From food truck trackers, conference room booking, freelance resources, Twitter alerts, sketch wireframes to curating user interface goodies. Why do you work on side projects?
Yeah, I think it just brings me a lot of joy. I think I'm just a very curious, passionate person. And I tend to pour that energy into projects. You know, and I think at some point, you know, I want to do something that's bigger than myself. And all of these side projects are not necessarily attempts at that, but, you know, everything is practice for me. Like every project I work on, I learn more and I can apply those learnings to the next thing that I do, you know, and I just get really excited about things like, you know, putting a curated list of resources together is not necessarily a novel idea. People are doing that. But, you know, I think there's value in putting your perspective on that curated list out into the world, and you're really adding value to people's lives. And I think that's a really great thing. Like if we have the power to do that as designers and technologists, then we should try.
Respect. So how do you green light these ideas? You know, is it intensive groundwork or is it simply a few searches and then yep, I can do this better?
Yeah. So I do have to be... like my time is limited. So I do have to think carefully about what to focus on. There are some projects and some things that I think about that just keep recurring. And, you know, I'll think about it, maybe I'll write it down or put it somewhere. And then I won't think about it for a while. And it just keeps popping up and almost like nagging at me. So I think I look at that feeling and I'm like, okay, I just really want to do something about this, you know? And of course I think about like how potentially valuable something will be, you know, to the community, because I think, you know, it's really easy. One of the first lessons I learned when I started making products was, which we all know now, is that just because you make something doesn't mean that people will use it or find it. And you can think it's the most amazing thing in the world, but, you know, getting your products and your projects out there and is really hard. So I do think a little bit about, you know, is the value enough to get a little traction? So, you know, word of mouth will spread it around.
I love the optimism, eh? So for those who aren't following Jess on Twitter, she's at Jess Eddy. You know, I've been following you for maybe 6 months. I just want to give a quick shout out to the positivity and the good vibes, you know, with minimal bitching like the rest of us.
Oh, thanks, Rob.
So let's transition into the next section, okay? It's called True, False, or Maybe.
Okay.
And you just need to shoot me back either of those three words.
I'm ready.
Figma is the best design tool.
Ooh, I'm going to get a lot of flack for this. False.
Good design is good business.
True.
LinkedIn has actually helped you get a job.
True.
There is no difference between UX and UI design. They should be classed together.
I'm going to say true.
Last question, okay? Google Inbox was the best email software.
True. Well, okay. for Google, yes.
From a UX designer with experience with many different levels of software development, what do you think happened here to warrant shutting down Google Inbox?
Oh, gosh, that's a great question. You know, I hadn't given it too much thought. That's something I would love to be, I'd love to be a fly on the wall on, but I don't know.
My two cents here is, I mean, they've shut down so many things. I actually need to link the Killed by Google landing page that just dropped, I think, 2 weeks ago, where they just listed everything they've kind of shut down. And it seems to be getting a little bit more aggressive. Mm. You know, they got 1.5 billion Gmail users, I think it's per month. Mm-hmm. And maybe this just wasn't enough traction. Maybe it's just simply a binary decision like that. It was just not enough traction.
Yeah, and I think a product like Google Inbox is really valuable to like everyone that's in our bubble,
Yeah. You
know, but if you talk to mainstream America, I don't think anyone in mainstream America is upset about Google Inbox going away. I don't know, I could be wrong, but you know, like really like nicely designed products like that tend to appeal to a very small part of the population that Google actually serves. So I don't know, it could not have been, yeah, like you said, it just could not have gotten enough traction.
Yeah, you know what? I don't care what they say. There's literally no easy to access snooze function on mobile. So it sucks.
Yeah.
So one of your more recent side projects, UI Goodies, is doing great. You know, for those who don't know, Jess has an excellent website curating design resources at uigoodies.com. Now features over 300 resources, 15 categories. Why do you think it had such a great reception?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I think in part, like there's just a timing to these things. And sometimes you get lucky and, you know, you just publish something at the right time and it just tends to get traction. But with UI Goodies, I was solving a pain point that I had. So I guess I was scratching my own itch to a certain extent, you know, and I was keeping track of all these great design resources in text files and other sort of unmanageable ways, you know, so I decided to make something of it. And it created a lot of value for me personally. And I believe it created a lot of value for the community as well. And you know, I got such great feedback when I launched UI Goodies. I was almost beside myself. Like everyone was so thankful and just giving me so much love. And that was really meaningful. And that really, you know, it really made it worth it to me.
But there's always going to be this need for curation.
Yeah.
You know, someone can maybe identify with your style and what you like, and they like your personal taste. You know, I feel that the more websites out there, we need these to cut through all the social media noise. Like our Google searches, are we finding free icon pack? I'm not going to really get what I want. I need a curated resource to save me time.
I think you're right. I think you're exactly right. And I think that's where we are with the internet and content now, because there is so much out there and there's so much being created every day. It's impossible to keep up with it. I think curation, sort of trivial as it seems, is actually really important and really meaningful. And it has a place on the internet for sure.
It's so interesting. So you've blogged, your goal is for UI Goodies to be the place where anyone from the design community can come and find tools.
Yeah.
You know, what is your plan to take it there? What is your plan to make it number one?
Yeah, well, I think one thing that I've discovered now since doing this for a while is it's great to have a website with all of these resources. And like you said, there's almost 300 or about 300 now. But now there's a different problem, which is it's actually taking a lot of time for someone to go through and find, let's say, the right color resource or something that they need. So curation is great, but there's still a bit of overhead in finding great tools that you might build into your workflow. So you know, I think a bit about the next step maybe being taking curation to the next level and sort of writing a bit about, you know, why certain tools are good for certain use cases to make it a little easier to find what's going to work for you.
So I see you got the carbon ads block going on the site now. So congrats on the monetization. It's always worth celebrating.
Yeah, thanks.
Can you see UI goodies generating enough income to be a full-time job?
Oh, that's a great question. I think right now it's hard to see it like that. I think this year I will do some tests and make some additions to the site and like see how that goes. I don't think right now in its current state it is capable of doing that. But I'm always working on building the newsletter subscribers and the emails that go out and get those to more people. So I think I will need to make some adjustments and find a way to add more value to people through the site for it to be monetizable.
So I see you've got, you know, newsletter sign up prompts on UI goodies, on We Freelancing, and I think a couple others. You know, how important is it to have that newsletter sign up on that initial launch traction?
Yeah, so I think it's super important. This is something I learned, and I got some advice from someone at the time, actually, Graham from Prototyper, and, you know, he was like, oh, if you're, you know, going to be launching this, like, definitely put up an email newsletter sign up form just in case things get crazy. So things did get a little crazy. And so I'm really happy I did that. I was a little late to the game, but I eventually got it there. But, you know, I think you really never know how things will be received and how largely they will be received. So, you know, an email newsletter form is super easy to implement and hardly takes any time. So I think it's really worth it.
And what are you using for these sends?
I use MailChimp currently.
And why did you choose them?
I think I've used MailChimp in the past. I've been a customer for a number of years. So I just kind of migrated back to them. When you have a site or something that is basically, you know, not making any money, it can be a bit hard to justify the MailChimp price, especially as you're subscribers go up in numbers. So I might think again about what the right platform is for that. I mean, what's nice about MailChimp is they have a lot of add-ons, so you can just do pop-up forms and stuff right out of the box on the same platform.
I also feel that 2,000 subscriber limit on the free is quite generous.
Yeah, that is good, actually. It is really good. I think once you get past that, the costs start to add up a bit.
Yeah, totally. So you've got two podcast side projects, one live and one work in progress.
That's right.
Assuming you dig podcasts, what shows are you enjoying right now? You know, it doesn't have to be design shows.
Oh yeah, it's a great question. So I'm going to open my podcast app right now, but a couple that I love are How I Built This.
Oh yeah, for sure.
On NPR. That's great. I listen to The Daily a lot. The Dropout has been really good. Okay. I've been kind of obsessed with the whole Elizabeth Holmes Theranos fiasco since reading the book. That's been really good. And then Nike has a podcast called Trained, and it focuses on all the facets of fitness, like sleep and diet, and that's really great as well. The big one, which is about potential earthquake in California. That's been really good. And the Indie Hackers podcast too.
Oh, awesome. Okay. So I'll link them all below. So tell us about this new podcast side project, you know, you're working on. Does it have a name?
It doesn't have a name. I don't know if I will give it a name. We'll see how it goes. I'm trying to finish it right now. I'm trying to get it out this month. But basically what happened was I stumbled upon doing some research last year, and I tweeted something about asking people what their biggest pain points and frustrations were around podcasts and listening to podcasts. And Koi Vin retweeted it, and he has a lot of followers. And I just sort of ended up getting all of this amazing feedback in this one Twitter thread, and it just kept coming in. So I started to look at that.
Bless Twitter.
Yes, bless Twitter. Great place for user feedback sometimes, or user research. So I started to look at the feedback, analyze it, put it into categories. And I started to see patterns around what people were saying. So there's some challenges around, and I guess this is more kind of like a wish list of what people wish they could do with podcasts. But there's a lot of pain points around, you know, not being able to understand really what an episode is about without listening to it or investing some time listening to it. So it's hard to figure out what to listen to. People had pain points around not being able to save notes or make highlights around interesting things that were being talked about in a podcast, and then related to that, share those insights and snippets from a podcast. So a lot of that revolves around the fact that the way we interact with podcasts is very straightforward. It's a bit of a one-way street. We're listening to audio, but we can't really do anything with it like we can with, say, articles or other, you know, things of that nature. So I'm working on a concept that gives sort of breaks down those boundaries, gives a lot of transparency into episodes, and lets you interact with them in a way that you can, like you can with articles.
Fascinating. So back to what you were saying earlier, where your time is limited. So just say this got massive traction on Product Hunt, people started using it. Does this automatically sort of devalidate the rest of your side project?
Well, that's a tricky one, because what I'm working on now is just a design concept. It won't be an app because it's very challenging to, like, I can't build it and it would actually take quite a bit of time to do. So my initial test is just to get the idea out there and see what happens and see what people say, and, you know, see if anyone contacts me about anything, and I'll just see how that goes.
Yeah. So this is, you know, very similar to what John O'Nolan did with Ghost, where he simply had a blog post. It got massive traction, you know, number one on Hacker News. That led to the Kickstarter, and now it's his whole life. And that's kind of how, that's a perfect way to test as well, just with the design. So why haven't you tried to build a prototype? Just funding.
So it's a bit of a complicated problem, because the way that we consume podcasts currently are dependent on the platforms and the software and the input methods that podcast creators have to set the podcast up. So, you know, right now it's not difficult to, you know, get podcast, basic podcast info, the title and metadata and around it. What's much more complicated and what we don't do today is give podcast creators a way to basically, I don't want to spoil it, but transcribe podcasts and organize the content in it in a way that can be consumed on a consumer end. So it's not just a podcast app that we're talking about that would need to be built. It's the whole platform that the podcast creator uses as well.
Jess, last question. There's loads of listeners out there that have pretty awesome side projects, but little to no traction. You know, what advice could you give someone to get that initial traction and just start the ball rolling?
Just tweet to me and I'll tweet about it.
Oh, perfect.
So I think writing about what you're doing is really important. You know, listen, it is hard to build an audience and it takes time. And like you talked about earlier, there is so much noise on the internet. So yeah, it's very challenging. But, you know, I think if you could focus on platforms that will help you get the word out and help you talk about your product, in a way that can make people really understand it and give transparency around it is really good. I think becoming a good writer is also a difficult skill, but it takes practice, and you know what it gives the audience is well worth it. Like you can really, if you can master a bit of storytelling, you can really communicate what something is doing and the problems it's solving and why it might be useful to you. So, you know, and I think getting your friends to talk about it and share it as well is probably a good idea.
Are you a fan of documenting the whole process?
You know, that's an interesting question, because I think when I look back on projects and businesses that I've been involved in, I almost wish I kept like a diary of it, because, you know, once you're in it and you're kind of living the day to day, you don't really think about it much. But once you have the opportunity to get to a certain point and reflect and have some hindsight, like a lot of like really crazy, amazing things happen, and a lot of, you know, learning moments that could really be valuable to a larger audience who are really trying to do the same thing. So I think documenting it in a way where you're capturing interesting insights and stories and learnings is, I would definitely say yes to that, because I think that there's really something bigger to that that can be shared with everyone else.
I'm currently documenting the Email Love website build.
Oh, great.
And for me, I'm trying to just become more accountable as the solo maker, you know, at the tip of Africa. I just want to, you know, share my experiences. I'm absolutely sure I'm going to fail on a few sections on the website. Some will do good, some will do bad. But for me to also look back at my process in a year to see where my thinking was and where I've grown.
Definitely. Yeah.
Would be quite a good study as a maker, you know, just on myself, more self-awareness.
Definitely.
Amazing, Jess. Thanks so much for being on the show.
Okay. Thank you, Rob. It's been really fantastic and fun. Thank you.
Awesome. And where can people follow your progress on your projects?
I will probably tweet about it. So Twitter is the best, at Jess Eddy.
Awesome. Thanks, Jess.
Okay. Thanks, Rob.
Well, that's it for the Yo Podcast Episode 3. Just how cool is Jess? I hope this outro track transitions you into some stimulating work or an epic outdoor adventure. Okay, 3 episodes equals 3 jabs, and according to Gary Vee, I've just unlocked 1 right hook, which is 1 ask. So please drop a review on iTunes if you're getting any value from the show. To be honest, podcast discovery is currently a dumpster fire, and ratings over there really helps to getting new listeners on iTunes. Big love, catch you in the next one.